the day before the Western Conference Finals begin. And that means we would be incredibly foolish not to use one of our finest resources, the voice of the Mavericks.
Our underwater ally.
Our underwater ally. It is Mark Followall.
Absolutely.
Follow. Hi, Mark.
That was excellent work by Mino just now.
It really was. It really was, and it really is. Mark, it's a fun time, isn't it? We're having fun.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we are. We're excited, boys, because there is a legit chance to win the whole darn thing.
Yeah.
I would have said it a different way, but Danny instructed me before I got on not to cuss because I'm on live radio. So
no, but yeah. Once you get to the halfway point of the journey, you can actually begin to dare to dream, if you will. And there is a why not us feeling beginning to happen in the city. Now, again, not to be Debbie Downer, but I will say there probably is that similar feeling in three other cities. Only one will be correct. But
I think that's fair.
Why not us?
Do you think, Mark?
I think that's very fair.
Do you think that if I would have told you, let's say, a month before the NBA draft, before Luka was picked, that if I said, okay, in 4 years, and you can dream of whatever scenario there is, in 4 years, the Mavericks are going to be playing the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. Would you have been like, how?
Yes, I would have, because that would buck what is typical NBA growth process. You know, guys in their fourth year don't usually lead a team to the conference finals. It happens sometimes. I think that Durant and Oklahoma City got to the finals whenever, Russ, I think, maybe was in his fourth year, and Durant, I think, was in his fifth year.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, that's the outlier, not the norm. So I would have thought that would have been pretty crazy for you to suggest that.
And I'm not even telling you that the Mavericks are going to take Luka, because even if I would have said they're taking Luka, no one really knew what Luka was. And so it just wouldn't have made any sense.
But that's the common theme, isn't it, with this entire roster? It's just a lot of guys that only now, and maybe it still hasn't happened, Mark, but everyone's still trying to wrap their heads around what they're missing with the Mavericks and how are the Mavericks here and that sort of thing. I really believe that's the identity that the whole league has looking at the Mavericks at times.
Well, along the lines of I was mowing the yards. I didn't catch all of your last segment, but I did catch the tail end of it. And I thought that Dan Bayless had a really good point, that there is still a perception that the Mavericks winning is some sort of indictment of the flaws of the other teams more than it is a celebration or an acknowledgement of how good the Mavs are.
Yep.
So I think there is that people are still kind of trying to figure it out. But obviously a lot of it's Luka, and I don't think people have come to terms with, and I, to some degree, I understand why, because for years and years and years, the identity of the Mavs has been uber efficient offense, shoot jump shots, shoot threes, and when they're on, they can beat anybody, but they don't have a way to win games outside of that. They are very much dependent on the make or miss league thing. And now they have this new identity of what I think is just some, and I think I've used this word with you guys before, they play some possessions of breathtaking defense, of closeouts and rotations that are so on point. It's just, especially when you get a chance to watch it, when you go back and watch it in slow-mo or watch possessions over and over again and see it. It's just, it's extraordinary, some of the things that they're doing defensively right now.
Are we missing out on, the wild-ass histrionics that they showed with Jason Kidd on the sideline, the little 15-minute soundbite where he's just going crazy? Have we not been paying attention to that throughout the year? And I mean, how much are you aware of him barking out like that during the game? Whoever they're playing, I'm sure it's intensified as the stakes rise. But that was really, really interesting to see that and to see him and everybody responding.
Well, I think that that's probably, you know, he's probably doing that a little bit more now than he was earlier in the year because the stakes are higher at this point. So, you know, I think he's been a tremendously calming presence on the sideline this year, and I think that the team has adapted to that. But there are certainly times that he is that involved on the sideline, although I think, again, that's something that's evolved more a little bit here later in the year as the stakes have gotten to a higher place.
This is Mark Folliwell with us here on The Ticket, and tomorrow night it's the Mavs and Golden State. We could do a nice hour on what happened Sunday, and I hate that. We can't because we have to begin looking ahead. I would love to hear...
I want to say one thing about Sunday.
Okay.
That is, I think I said this to you Friday, and I want to say it again. The Game 6 win changed the entire calculus of the series because for the first time then... Two things were not happening. One, the Mavericks weren't chasing the series, and two, Phoenix was out of a margin for error at that point. And I just think that absolutely changed everyone's mindset going into Game 7. And it put the Mavericks in this place where they had the proverbial nothing to lose and were playing with tremendous confidence. And Phoenix had everything to lose and were not playing with confidence and were playing with the weight of expectations of, you know, the potential of falling very, very far short of their goal, which they did. And I think that everything changed with Game 6. You know, that was the difference maker in terms of everybody's mindset, I think, for Game 7.
Yeah, I also want to volley back on that series because I think what we saw Sunday, for those of us who believe with every fiber of our being that the sports psychology and the between the ears element and the confidence or pressure or however you want to describe things like what we saw Sunday, I don't think we've ever seen the type of masterclass we saw on Sunday from Doncic. And the way he was seemingly openly laughing at the crowd, at the Suns, at whatever that was in the first quarter, the nerve of that guy, I mean, that's the stuff that was on like Michael Jordan videos about dunking on Mel Turpin. I mean, dude, these are things that we're not used to. This is weird.
There was a ruthlessness about it. And then coupled with, if you want to talk psychology, things can collapse under the weight of their own expectation.
Yes.
And, you know, the saying about what pressure does, it can make diamonds and it can burst pipes. It, you know, both of those things can happen. And I think maybe both of them happened all right there before our eyes. You know, one thing happened to one team and one thing happened to another team and another player specifically.
And it just, speaking of diamonds, it just all looked like poo-poo from the Phoenix end. To quote a great man.
I mean, it was a literal statement game. They literally issued a statement after the game. I don't know that's why we call them statement games, but maybe it is now.
Like an apology that the Suns sent?
The Suns made a statement after the game. Ergo, statement game.
Well, I know we probably don't have a whole lot of time. So here's a big thought I've got for you guys about the Golden State series.
Please.
If you would like to hear it.
Yep. I would.
It's a two-pronged thought here about two trends that are part and parcel of the Steve Kerr era Warriors that the Mavericks are going to have to break one, if not both of them here. One of them is, as it relates to tomorrow night, under Kerr, the Warriors are 20-2 in game ones, and they've won 12 in a row at home. Their only game one stumbles in the Steve Kerr era of the Warriors are at home to Oklahoma City in 2016, a series where they ultimately got down 3-1 and then came back and won. And they lost game one of the finals to Toronto a few years ago, but I guess it would have been the 2019 finals. So, you know, they're used to never having to play from behind in series. And they have a couple of times, and to their credit, they've been able to bounce back, but they're usually in the front runner position. The times they've been behind were 3-1, as I mentioned, against Oklahoma City. And remember, they were also down 3-2 against the Rockets in 2018 and then won games 6 and 7 after Chris Paul got hurt with the Rockets and then moved on to the finals. Won that year. The next year is the year they lost to Toronto in 2019, but they won another title there in 2018. So they're a front running group. But when they have been put under pressure a couple of times in the Kerr era, to their credit, they did bounce back. So the 20-2 thing in game one. And the other thing is they've won a road game in 25 straight series. And this even predates Kerr. This is the 2 years of Mark Jackson. And the last time they played a series on the road and didn't win a game on the road was after they beat the Mavericks in 07, where they played Utah in the conference semifinals. They did not win a road game in that series. So you're going to have to interrupt one of those things, or possibly both of them, if you're going to be in a position to win this series. You know, because if you get down 1-0 and figure that Golden State's going to win a game on the road, then, of course, you're going to be in a position where you're going to have to either win games 2 and 5 or win another road game 7. I don't really want to take my chances with that, obviously.
No, not with their experience and the pedigree and all that.
How do you defend the Warriors? Can you at least match up the starting five against the Warriors just for fun here?
Well, if they're going to start Looney, then you would start Powell on the Mavericks side of things. And I don't think the Mavericks going to change. I mean, they haven't changed at this point, and I think they'll keep on doing what they'll do. So you'll bring Kleba off the bench, if nothing else, to protect him from foul trouble. But he'll get into the games quickly. You know, I think the Powell minutes will be when Looney plays, if in fact Looney is in their starting lineup, which he did start game 6 against the Memphis series, in the Memphis series, that is. You know, obviously they'll start Curry, Thompson, Green, and Wiggins, and then the fifth starter is the question mark. Do they go small? Do they play Kuminga, who did start some of the Memphis series, or do they play a little bit bigger at the beginning of the first and the third quarters and start Looney? I guess that's kind of the question. But ultimately, what the game's going to get to is small ball lineups. And the Mavericks love to play small, as we've seen in these playoffs, but the Warriors are the architects of playing small, and a big reason why they won titles going, you know, starting back with their 2015 championship. But ultimately, they will play a lot of minutes, especially in second halves, of Curry, Thompson, Poole, Wiggins, and Draymond. And the Mavericks will match that with some combination of these six guys, the three-point guards, Doncic, Brunson, and Spencer Dinwiddie, and then your three wings. Kleber, obviously, a little kind of a wing-big hybrid, and Bullock and Finney-Smith. So, you know, those are going to be the lineups where a lot of things get decided.
A lot of attack in the basket in those scenarios, you know? I mean, you think about what the Mavericks had to face, whether, you know, they drew Ayton out or not. There was always a seven-footer around, it seemed like, and Phoenix had a couple of decent backup bigs too, and it's weird when you go from you know, such a Goliath like they had in Utah with Gobert and then big dudes to a lineup where potentially the tallest guy on the court is 6'7", 6'8". It's a different animal, and like you said, they're the architects and they know what they're doing out there.
Yeah, and if you look at their roster, I mean, there are no bigs other than Looney. Nope. Everybody else, it's guards and wings at that point, because Wiseman, of course, is the only other big on the roster, and he's not playing. So there's going to be a lot of small ball in this series, and that's, you're going to have to move it on offense, and you're going to have the same aggressive perimeter defense that they've been playing through the first two games of the series. That's really a lot of what it boils down to. The good news is you should be able to hold your own a little bit better in rebounding, because, you know, I think they got out-rebounded in 5 of the 6 games against Utah, maybe, or something like that, or maybe even in 1 and out-rebounded in the other 5 games. And I think they didn't out-rebound Phoenix in a game in this series until game 7. You know, so they should be in a position to have a little bit better footing in the rebound battle. And the other thing, too, that's a key stat is turnovers. And Golden State does have a propensity to turn it over a lot. They're one of the highest turnover teams in the league. And the Mavericks taking care of the ball have been, you know, big factors in beating Utah and beating Phoenix as well. And then, you know, when they had their really bad game 5 against Phoenix, obviously a lot of that was when they had an out of character, horrible turnover game, and specifically third quarter when they turned it over 12 times. So those are things that are always important in any matchup, but I think, you know, take on some unique importance here because of, you know, the fact that Golden State doesn't have the size these other two teams did, and the fact that Golden State is just, you know, for all the great things they do efficiently on offense, taking care of the ball is not one of them.
Great stuff, Mark. Thank you so much, man. Appreciate it.
You got it, man. All right, we'll talk to you later this week.
That's Fowler, yes, sir. And thanks, we will Mark. Talk to him later this week.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.